Welcome back, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGiulio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Showcase Studio right here on Michigan Avenue. It's Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Get those requests in, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to be talking about mascots, the weirdest sports mascots everywhere. It's always a fun topic. We'll get into that. And Dan is going to give Esmeralda and I a quiz about characters and their catchphrases. That's all coming up. You can follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page, facebook.com/Nick D Show. There you go. So get your 2 for Tuesday request in as well at 312-981-7200. Okay. My next guest has a fascinating story. He's a stand-up comedian. His name is Nimmer, and he's from Lebanon. And he migrated to the United States at 2 from the Middle East and was exposed to stand-up comedy here. And then when they moved back, his family moved back to Beirut, he had that desire to be a stand-up comedian, only there's really no stand-up scene in the Middle East. So he made one. He's since been on, he had a Showtime special. He's been on Larry Wilmore show, the nightly show. And now he's touring, and he's going to be playing here at the Laugh Factory this Friday for one night only. You might want to check out his show. Let's welcome to the show, Nimmer. Nimmer, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you so much for having me, my man. How are you?
Good, man. Good. Well, you got a fascinating story, man, I got to say.
thank you.
So give me the full background. You moved to San Diego when you were 2.
Yeah, we left Lebanon. You know, I'm sure everybody knows about Beirut and its wars.
Yeah.
So we fled. We didn't flee. We immigrated here back when I was almost 2. I wasn't even 2 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in San Diego. That's all I knew. But when I was about 10 years old, almost 11, my dad was, you know, the Civil War ended in Lebanon. And my dad was like, we need to go back to Beirut. And I jokingly say where he concluded it would be safer. And then we ended up going back and living there. And I only moved back here about 4 years ago. But as you said, you know, I caught the stand-up comedy bug here. And I decided that we needed it in the Middle East, and I back in the year 2000, I started the industry from scratch.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. It really is. Well, let me talk about your childhood in San Diego. When did you get exposed to comedy? How did that happen? Who were some of the influential ones for you?
Well, I mean, it sucks to say this now, but I mean, I was 5 years old at the time, and my parents, my mom had been exposed to stand up as a young child. She had grown up in England.
Mm.
My dad had never experienced it, and I don't have any good memories as a child. You know, we were leaving under not easy situations.
Yeah.
So my parents weren't usually happy and stuff. But the first memory I have of them like really being happy, they were watching stand up, and my dad was literally like, I don't think I had ever seen my dad like laugh. Like he was always, you know, and here he was not laugh. I mean, here he was just losing it. Like I don't know if anybody, you know, who's listening can remember the first time they ever came in contact with stand-up comedy. Like, really, if you happen to be very lucky and you come in contact with like Eddie Murphy or Richard Pryor or you know, Bill Hicks or any of the greats, and that's your first exposure, it could be life-changing.
Yeah.
You know, and for my parents, it was Bill Cosby, which is unfortunate now to say, but I mean,
yeah, I know, Nimmer, it's funny because it's Bill Cosby for me too. When I was a little kid, it was Bill Cosby.
Too, huh?
Yeah.
I mean, look, his body of work is absolutely outstanding, but I mean, now it's just so tainted to say, but that's the truth. It was Bill Cosby was the first thing we were exposed to, and then my parents started to record, you know, every comedy special that would come out, like on VHS, you know, on HBO and. And then I used to watch and I used to laugh, but I had no clue what was going on. I just, you know, for me, it was just like I was partaking in this amazing experience where my parents were just so happy.
Yeah.
You know, for that 1 hour or whenever they'd be watching, everything was gone. And that blew my mind. And then Dana Carvey was the first comic that he had this set. He was hosting a bunch of comics on HBO. They filmed that. They recorded it on VHS. And I remember memorizing Dana Carvey's bit, like, and reciting it. This was when I was maybe 5,
wow.
5 and a half.
Wow.
And telling everybody, when I grow up one day, I'm either going to be a Ninja Turtle or a stand-up comedian. You know? And so one down, one to go. You
yeah,
know?
Exactly. The Ninja Turtle thing can still happen, Nimmer.
Yeah, for sure. You know, stem cell research.
Yeah.
I'm very positive about it.
I have to say, you know, so you go back now to Beirut, and you now have this spark in you to do stand-up comedy, but it doesn't exist there. How kind of frustrating was that at first?
I mean, a lot. Yeah. You know, I mean, you got to imagine, like, here you have, like, okay, you go to a club, you try out a few minutes of material, it doesn't work out, you can start out with open mics, you can work on your craft, you know. Over there, there were no comedy clubs, period, and no other comedians, so I didn't have a community, I didn't have, you know, all of my comedy was coming from cassette tapes that my mom had recorded when she was young in London. You know, I was listening to Lenny Bruce and Woody Allen doing stand-up comedy and Steve Martin and you know, and then Bill Hicks. When the internet started to become a thing, I discovered Bill Hicks, yeah. And I started discovering Dave Chappelle, and you know, you start downloading it. So my fraternity was all you know, either digital or audio, like analog audio tapes. And then every show I've ever done had to be like an hour long, and it was just me. There were no openers, and the venues weren't set up for comedy. People didn't even know what I was doing, you know, yeah. At the beginning. So it was very difficult, but I'm glad that I was good enough to be able to get by the skin of my teeth, you know, just to do just good enough to keep it going as I got better. I grew up in front of the crowd, more or less, you know, yeah. and it carried the whole thing on my shoulders. But then it for lack of a better term, it blew up across the Middle East.
Yeah.
and it became like a cultural phenomenon. Like it's probably the biggest industry right now, besides, you know, singing,
yeah.
that there is across the entire region. And I'm very proud of what we've accomplished.
You should be, man. You should be. Now, you started out alone. There were no venues. There were no comedy clubs. You had to write a bunch of material and do really long sets. What were the? I mean, you obviously had to build the crowds up because nobody knew what the hell yeah. you were doing. So, what was it like? Those yeah. first few shows must have been. I mean, did you alone went, booked the venue and set it all up and everything?
Yeah, yeah. I'd go up to a venue and I tell them I want to do stand up, and they'd be like, what's that? And I say, you know, I just stand and I talk, and they're like, okay, is it like for free? And I'm like, no, you know, we can charge people. And they're like, how much? I'm like, you know, like $20 a ticket. But they're like, that's what you'd pay to see a band. I'd be like, yeah. And they'd be like, that's like four people with instruments. But you know, I loved how they looked at it from such a pragmatic way. They're like, why would somebody pay $20 for one person? Like, right. Doesn't make sense. So then I would say, listen, what's the night that you guys have no business, that you're closed? It's always a Monday or a Tuesday.
Right, right.
I'd say, give me that night. I don't want to be paid. Give me the night. I will fill this place up. I will do my show. People will absolutely love it and demand that we have another one. You can take all the money. And they'd be like, okay, if you're that stupid, sure, go ahead. I do it once. We would crush it. And I've always been really good at marketing and promotion.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. How did you get the crowds? What did you do?
Well, for everything, it's when I first started out, I mean, it was, you know, you start out with your friends and family, right?
Like sure.
you get in touch, they bring out their friends and family. Then I started to use MySpace.
Oh, good. Remember those days.
Remember that? I used to go into MySpace pages and upload a flyer, a digital flyer, to the comment section of every MySpace page. I could do 14 a day. That was the most that I could do with the internet connection speed that I had. 14 a day was like a record. And we would put them out there, you know, try to get in 30, 40 people, 100 people. It started to grow slowly. And then a radio station, the biggest one in the Middle East, they had heard of me. They came to my first, like, big show where I was able to bring in a crowd of over 100.
Yeah.
And the owner, his name's Roger, he's a visionary. He saw me. This is before anybody even knew what the hell I was doing. And he's like, you're going to be huge one day. We want to work with you. Can you do phone pranks? And I was like, I used to do them as a kid. He's like, do one. And I ended up doing phone pranks on the radio show. They went so viral and across the entire region as well. It literally launched pretty much people knowing about me, and they started to come see what I was about. And
yeah.
then I got a radio show, and it was years and years of hustle. And then
sure.
when Facebook came out and Instagram came out, and, you know, I was on top of all of that.
Yeah. Wow, man. And then you're playing to thousands of people when you play in the Middle East.
Yeah.
That's amazing, oh, yeah. man. I saw some of the footage. It's unbelievable, the amount of people that you get to come out. And
it's in English.
Yeah, that's the thing, man. Like, yeah, it's amazing.
I'm an American. I'm through and through. I'm American. I mean, I'm Lebanese ethnically, but I mean,
yeah.
I speak English. I'm American. I'm Christian. I'm not Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
And I want people to know that, because that's the thing. When my last special you mentioned on Showtime, No Bombing in Beirut, we filmed it in Beirut and in Los Angeles, but I cut between the two shows mid-sentence. Even though I'm wearing the same clothes, I did that on purpose. People watch it. They don't realize that they're watching something that's starting in Beirut and finishing in LA and then going back to Beirut.
Yeah.
Because I wanted people to understand it's one show. We're all the same.
Wow. That's
and
great.
That, my career in the Middle East has really been a testament to that. When we're doing shows for 10,000, 12,000, 20,000 people, when I'm coming here doing shows for 2,000, 3,000, it's not as big as the Middle East yet, but we're working on it.
Yeah.
And people are laughing on both sides at the same jokes really says a lot.
That's
know?
Great, man. Nimmer, hang on, okay?
Sure thing.
Okay, there we go. We're going to take a quick break. Comedian Nimmer is with us, and he's going to be playing at the Laugh Factory this Friday night. The show is called Love Isn't the Answer. And you can check out nimmercomedy.com. That's N-E-M-R comedy. N-E-M-R comedy.com. And we'll have a link on our Facebook page. More with Comedian Nimmer right after we take this break on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday, get your requests in, one artist, two songs, 312-981-7200. We're going to find out how good Esmeralda and I are at guessing characters' catchphrases and much more coming up. We're going to talk about mascots, too. Right now, though, I'm talking to a fascinating guy, a funny guy, a very, very funny guy. His name is Nimmer, and he is from Lebanon, and he is touring around now doing a show called Love Isn't the Answer, and he'll be at the Laugh Factory right here in Chicago this Friday, April 6th. And it's one night only, and he's got a pretty amazing story to tell. Nimmer, welcome back.
Thank you.
I have to say, man, the idea that when you told your father that you wanted to be a comedian, and then he said, "Well, what are you going to be, a clown?" And he thought, the whole bit that you do with the horn is so hilarious, man. And
thank you.
Yeah, and, like he said, tell everybody he thought you were just going to be like a clown.
He did. He was like, "So you're just going to stand up and be a clown in front of everyone?" I was like, "No." He told me that I want to be a clown. I said, "No, I want to be a stand-up comic." He said, "Oh, so you're going to stand up and be a clown?" That was like, you know, kind of a differentiator.
Right.
The joke kind of mirrors reality in that he wasn't supportive at all until I made it on the cover of Rolling Stone magazine in the Middle East.
Right.
And then he went around telling everybody, like, "This is my son, the comedian."
Right.
You know, like, I always told him, "Follow your dreams," you know, and now he's on the cover. I think what he did was the right thing. He obviously knew what stand-up was and everything. I truly believe that a job of a parent is to crush and demoralize their children's dreams at every opportunity. Because if you do that and the kid goes on to do what he's doing, then he was meant to do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, you have to give him an obstacle to overcome, because the reality is much more difficult than your dad not believing in you or your mom saying you're not good enough. You
right,
know what I'm saying?
Right. No, you know, and the material that you do, I mean, you do some political stuff, but you do a lot of family things and observational stuff. But tell us about Love Isn't the Answer. This is the show that you're doing at the Laugh Factory Friday night. Tell us about that.
Well, that's a new show. I think that's the show that, you know, my shows are kind of a result of where I am in my life. And where I am in my life is a reflection of where the world is at. It's kind of the show that America needs right now, because it's a real, real show. I don't pull any punches, and we talk about, you know, when people come around and they look at all the negativity and stuff going on in the world right now, you always have this knee-jerk reaction where people are like, you know, just spread the love, man, and, you know, everything will work out, and we'll take care of it all. And my presentation or purpose, if you will, perspective in the show is that, no, love actually isn't the answer. If you're faced with hate, the only thing that is the answer is a better and more disciplined hate. And it's kind of like taking a look at the emotion that we have associated with hate, and why do we look at it as a negative emotion when it can also be so positive?
Mm.
I give an example where I say, when two people are in love and they don't want them to be together, they don't fight to stay together because they love each other. They fight to stay together because they hate being apart.
Huh.
And in that distinction, there's a lot to go through. And I tell, you know, several stories about where I came face to face with hate, and love definitely was not the answer, and nothing would have changed if I had just kind of just placated and said, I will just answer this with love, and eventually things will change.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting time to be a comedian, especially a comedian from the Middle East.
Oh, yeah. Very.
Yeah.
Very interesting. And I think people will be surprised at the views that I have and the way I take a look at things, because my life is governed by shocking realities. When you grow up in a place as beautiful as the U.S. and then you go to a place as beautiful as Lebanon, but that unfortunately is marred with so much war,
yeah,
and you live through multiple wars, you lose friends, you lose family to things that you could never have any control about, you gain a perspective that's truly grounded in reality. So there's no wishy-washy kind of belief system that I have that, you know, my comedy is survivalist comedy, because in the Middle East, we use jokes to fight ISIS. That's how we defeated ISIS, was with jokes. And I talk about that.
Yeah.
And love isn't the answer. You know, how do you deal with extremism, ideologies, and hatred? So my comedy, some people might take a look at the topic list and say, wow, this is going to be a dark show. But in fact, it's a very uplifting and positive show because I'm taking off all of these weird veils that we've put on where we can't even talk about things that are really happening today because we're all, like, afraid of offending each other or saying the wrong thing. And it's like, no, let's be real. Let's talk about this because that's all we can do, and that's actually the most powerful weapon we have.
That's great, man. This is we're talking with comedian Nimmer, and that's spelled N-E-M-R. NEMRComedy.com is the website. And it's one night only. It's this Friday, and it's Love Isn't the Answer, and it's at the Laugh Factory. Let me ask you this, Nimmer, since you essentially had to bring stand-up comedy, the concept of it, what it is, and everything to the Middle East from the ground up, did you invent hecklers in the Middle East? Have the audiences caught on to heckling?
Oh my goodness! You know what? I guess that's the funniest. Nobody's ever asked you that. I'm sorry, I laughed a lot. But
that's
that
okay, man.
So brilliant. Did I invent heckling? I mean, let me put it this way. I wouldn't say I would invent heckling, but I can prove to you that heckling is an innate, natural instinct for all human beings, because nobody had a problem heckling the hell out of me for when I first started getting on that stage, and they've never seen a comedy show. You know what I'm saying?
So it's just a human instinct.
It's a human instinct to look at somebody and say, you got to earn my respect.
Right.
That's what I believe heckling at its core is: either you have to earn my respect or I want more attention. So it's either or, but in many cases with me in the Middle East, it was kind of like, who's this clown up on stage right now? And why do I have to listen to him?
Well, it's comforting.
If I handled it in a funny way, they'd be like, okay, all right, okay, do your thing.
It's great. It's good to know that heckling exists worldwide. I think
irrespective of religion, ethnicity, everybody loves to hate. And there we go. Love
there it is.
You see what I'm saying?
There it is, man. Let me ask you about your writing. How often do you try to write material, and does it come naturally to you, or do you try to sit down every day and try to write?
I write every day, but I don't write jokes. I write things. So all my stand-up is actually, instead of dealing with like current issues and political issues, I don't do political humor. Like, I won't go out and tell jokes about Trump or Hillary or what, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
What I deal with is, I deal with philosophy. So my comedy has always been a bit interesting in that I'll take philosophical things and deal with them by, you know, just like you put together an argument. Every joke is a premise, and then you try to solve it with your argument. For me, the premises are basically stuff like, if I say love isn't the answer, how can you use hate to overcome things? And you know, how I will demonstrate it by telling you hilarious stories of how we defeated ISIS with jokes, for instance.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So what I do is, all the time, you know, we're thinkers at the end of the day, all of us in the entertainment industry, and whatever thoughts that I have, sometimes I'll have profound thoughts, sometimes I'll have very silly thoughts. That's when I sit and I write every day. You know, it'll be on my phone, it'll be on a notebook in my pocket, it'll be in the car, they'll be all over the place.
Yeah.
But then what I do is I try to get on a stage as much as possible without the joke in my mind at all, but the topic. And I know my objective is to make people see what I'm saying, and I know that the only way they can see what I'm saying is if I make them laugh uncontrollably.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of like marries together on stage.
Yeah. Well, you're great, man, and congratulations on your success, and your story is incredible, man, and inspiring and really awesome, man. And it was,
man, you're very kind. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Great to have you on the show. Nimmer is his name, and you can see Love Isn't the Answer, his latest show, which is at the Laugh Factory in Chicago this Friday, April 6th. It's one night only. Get your tickets at NimmerComedy.com. Nimmer, a real pleasure to talk to you, man. I really enjoy your work, and congratulations.
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Okay, take care. See ya.
Bye-bye.
There you go. There's Nimmer, everybody. You can see him Friday night at the Laugh Factory with his show, Love Isn't the Answer. Really kind of an astonishing story. So there you go. All right, we're going to take a break, and then when we come back, we get the news right here on 720 WGN.